But since you wish to know of the effects, and not the cause, I will outline them to you. Humanity's great failing is never being able to walk without its eyes glued to the road it has already covered. It has thus become a pillar of salt like Lot's wife. Man is basically conservative and prefers to live in the memory of times that can never return rather than in the hope of a radiant future. He fears the day to come instead of helping the future and preparing its way. He expends an enormous amount of energy on things that cannot help him, and wastes precious time on futile things. For instance, he wastes money, teachers' and pupils' time, maintains buildings, uses up brain power, all to teach dead languages which should have been buried long ago. Paper, ink, books, chalk and a thousand other things that could be put to a better use are used in teaching useless things. Instead of a dead language, why not teach the functioning of photosynthesis? It would be more worthwhile to know the meaning of potential gradient, or the functions of the body, rather than the declension of an ancient language. Rather than look into a most promising future, they prefer to live among the mummies of history, and try to resuscitate the past. There is a multitude of things which children never hear about, and which they may never come to hear about. Rather than teaching recitation, it would be better to show them how to grow onions and celery, or teach them that wheat, besides providing good food, can also be used for making vegetable oil, viscose, xylose, acetic acid, soap, alcohol, cellulose, syrup, textiles, fuel, etc., and that the stalks and leaves from which all these things are made should never be buried because they are unsuitable as fertilizer and are carriers of crop diseases. Teach them rather the meaning of the hydrogenous potential of the soil, how to correct acidity, what soil requires in the way of nitrogen, cesium, cobalt, sulfur, manganese and phosphorus. Show them that vegetable hormones can produce cabbage leaves 10 feet high, and apples weighing several pounds. Children can forget the names of those who brought devastation to humanity, but they should never forget that it is possible to transform the light of the sun, virtually without loss, into usable energy by passing it through a coal gas which unites with water to form formaldehyde, and that the oxidized aldehyde can turn sunlight into electric current. There is far greater beauty to be found in the saturation point of a solution than there is in the story of the destruction of Carthage. Millions of individuals die of cancer, whereas schools teach children the colors of national flags, offending the innate gregarious instinct of man which intuitively abhors the artificial barriers which economic power has erected in the world. Rather than dwell upon the word China, they should learn more about cesium, instead of France, Brazil, USA, USSR. They should learn more about the functions of nitrogen, phosphorus, sulfur and iron, teaching them that these elements, among others, produce proteins, and that they, in turn, linked to cesium molecules, make up the anti-cancerous elements normally contained in the liver. Tell them that these same proteins, when linked to cobalt molecules, combat anemia and are known as vitamin B12. Instead of sounding praises to the destructive power of an invader, show them that heavy hydrogen is one of the main causes of cancer when it gets into a cell, and that cesium has the ability to strip it of an electron, making it into ordinary innocuous hydrogen. Show them, statistically, that cancer generally affects children who have not yet reached fertility, or old people who have passed it, that sex is thus a defense mechanism of the body, and that these hormones should not be wasted for the mere satisfaction of instincts. Teach them that instead of drinks it would be preferable to take an extract of liver with enzymes, since these elements cause cancer to recede. It surprises me that humanity, not having discovered the cure for tuberculosis, should learn rhetoric and dissertation at school. These things should be pastimes for people who do not have diseases to worry about that bring misery to millions of people. It is as though someone in mortal agony should begin to study the meter of Alexandrine verses. But all the above put together are not as serious as humanity's main fault, the dispersal of his forces to an alarming degree. I cannot quote the exact statistics for the world, or even for your country. But we can make an approximation. There are about 50 million people in Brazil. About 30 million of these are children too young to take part in the productive life of the country. Another 10 million are women, which leaves 10 million men. In the latter figure one must include the retired and the unproductive, beggars, lepers, consumptives, lunatics, invalids, the blind, thieves, prisoners and the unemployed. A large proportion of workers in unproductive, speculative undertakings, such as wholesalers, retailers, advertising men, estate agents, stockbrokers, lawyers, bankers. Others are employed in the police, army, navy, air force, magistrature, diplomatic and civil service, etc. This leaves barely a million productive men employed in agriculture and industry. We would also have to be sure that this agriculture is productive in the true sense of the word, and that the industries are the ones that the country really needs. In any case, even supposing that all the men were productive, we would still only have 2 million out of a total of 50 million, that is to say, one man working for every 25 people, which is absurd when we consider that this individual who does the work for the other 25 generally does so without mechanical aids, by the sweat of his brow, so that the others can maintain their standard of living. Of the million or so who take part in agriculture, many work against the better interests of society, growing tobacco and stimulants, or are engaged in the fattening up of animals which impoverish the land and subsequently poison man with their meat. We could say almost the same for those employed in industry. There is nothing wrong with factories, their chimneys are, in a sense, lungs getting rid of carbon dioxide from the central organism. But man does little to put them to proper use. Factories are by no means always built to solve fundamental problems. The great majority are engaged in making cosmetics, jewels, useless trinkets for women, endless handbags, ridiculous hats, novelties, nail varnish, shoes which hurt the feet and ruin the carriage, stockings which offer no protection, cigars to poison the body, chewing gum, footballs, pistols and sporting guns, munitions, alcoholic drinks and other stimulants. Yet there are countless useful and necessary things which could be mass-produced, such as building material, medicaments, synthetic vegetable hormones, machines for producing energy, electronic stoves, concentrated foodstuffs for distressed populations, philosophical and scientific books, plastic shoes, surgical and orthopedic instruments, fertilizers, mechanical harvesters and sowers, insecticides, prefabricated houses, indestructible furniture, prospecting instruments, nitrogen plant, etc. But let us leave aside all this wasted effort and see how you make use of the work of these 2 million men who are at least doing something. The annual budget estimates for your country must be somewhere about 6.5 billion cruzeiros, 1952. Of this sum, about 4.5 billion are spent on the armed forces, and about 1.5 billion on civil service, the judiciary, state loans, government expenditure, foreign ministry, electoral machinery, official journeys, banquets, etc. The small remainder is used for beneficial purposes, such as education, public health and agriculture. Imagine if all this money were ploughed into the construction of roads, schools, hospitals, churches, research institutes, sanitation, new industries, housing schemes, shelter, medicaments, transportation, etc. Imagine if this vast number of non-productive people were to be diverted into new productive enterprises. Even then everything is not governed by the federal budget. What about state expenditure? Have you checked the amount of money spent on local governments, public service, police, etc.? How many police are there in your state alone? The expenditure on horses alone which are kept for parades would go a long way to feeding and sheltering the hungry who walk the streets in the heat and in the rain. It is ironical that in a society in which its people can suffer from hunger and cold, horses should be given balanced rations and covered with good woolen blankets. Is a police force necessary? Yes, it is necessary. It is the necessity of having a policed state that Rousseau spoke of. But if it is necessary, it is only because men have made it indispensable. If a people waste their productivity on bad things, misery results from their irresponsibility. If there were an abundance, no one would think of killing or robbing. Human passions are stirred up by money because money gives rise to arguments, to profit, the voracity of financiers, and to ruthlessness. If there is a robbery, it is not, with certain exceptions, because the thief enjoys the crime, but because he feels robbed by society which denied him the right to have his own house, to till the land without paying rent, and to fully enjoy the liberty which nature gives as a matter of course. The waste of fuel under the present system is alarming. Cars, which could carry several people, are usually driven by one person who, in the majority of cases, is merely amusing himself, whereas the person who is working has no means of transport. The avid desire for profit and business create a demand for petrol, oil, tires, etc. If the structure of society were changed, the traffic that now blocks the roads in the rush hour would disappear, leading to economy in both fuel and vehicles. Man could work less than a year in his whole life, and yet live better than the richest man on earth. But for human society, even progress is dangerous. If automation is developed, men will die of hunger owing to unemployment. Yet even the manual labor that men do today could be done by obedient and indefatigable electronic brains. These robots could plow, sow, spread insecticide and fertilizers, prune and reap. If they sensed an ailing plant, they would be able to judge whether it should be treated or whether it constituted a danger for other plants and should be uprooted. These robots could be developed to a point where they would be able to drive vehicles automatically without danger of collision or accident. They could pilot planes with safety, informing their base about any possible defects, and taking steps to repair them in full flight. They could be used to measure metabolism and act as doctors supplying restorative energy. For less than the amount of money that is spent on smoking every year, you could do away with cancer. For a tenth of the money spent on drinks, you can banish leprosy from the face of the earth, and tuberculosis would no longer be a subject for statistics. Control of the atmosphere could regulate the climate, avoiding natural catastrophes, and saving crops. Electric devices could be placed in streets to absorb all irritating noises. Education could be changed. Naturally, any radical change would involve the dismissal of teachers, which in the present world situation would mean that they would suffer serious privation. Today most people spend the best part of their lives, from the age of 7 until about 30, poring over books, and at the end of this, they are chagrined to find that they have learned nothing, and still have a long way to go. A lifetime is too short to learn everything. However, using hypnosis in a truly scientific spirit, the whole scope of education could be changed. In a few hours, a child could master a whole subject which at present takes the better part of its youth to master. Further, he would do so with great accuracy. It would be sufficient to put a child into a controlled hypnotic sleep, with the help of a drug such as cannabis sativa, or a combination of chloroform and morphia, administered at intervals with a psychologist at hand to dictate all the material to be learned. This could be carried out on a large scale with thousands of pupils at once, making use of headphones. It would be easier, more convenient, and cheaper, and it would not bore a child with long lectures. It would not be subject to the shortcomings of the teachers, and other disadvantages of the present system. Pupils could go to college early, sleep and come back with a scientific degree in their pockets. Do you think this is too short a time to learn so much? Surely a teacher would not be able to dictate enough in that time. The spirit pays no heed to the concepts of time and space. An eternity can be condensed into a second, or a second can be made into an eternity. One could create the system of rapid transmission. Human thought waves work on a band of about 5 millimeters wavelength. If electrical messages were sent within this band in successive waves, the whole of human knowledge could be transmitted in a very short time. The same method could be used to do away with atavistic tendencies and criminal tendencies. In hypnotic sleep, the mind becomes receptive and ready to learn and profit by sound teaching. One could go further and break down the barrier between the conscious and the subconscious. However, this would require considerable technique, which could only be mastered in time, as there is a risk of the concept of time disappearing from the mind altogether. Prisons could be emptied, In the first place, by deleting criminal tendencies from the human mind so that no further malefactors would come into being, and in the second because those with criminal tendencies already would be re-educated by the hypnotic process and reintegrated into society. With its framework changed, society would overcome the moral prejudices which dog its steps. Man would overcome death and old age would no longer exist on earth. Q. How do we overcome death? A. In order to overcome death, one needs to know the fundamentals of life. It is the spirit which gives life to the body, and is bound magnetically to the body. The current flowing through a solenoid gives rise to a magnetic field which draws the iron core into the coil. Any field must have a center to act as a vehicle for the lines of force which it generates. Once it has attracted the iron, the solenoid can be turned in any direction without the cow falling out. No visible bond is holding it, only lines of force, several thousand to the square inch, which are not visible to the naked eye. The relationship between spirit and the body is similar to that between the solenoid and the iron core. The body corresponds to the solenoid and its current can be measured with an encephalograph. The spirit represents is the iron core. If the magnetic field made by the body is interrupted, or its lines of force broken, or if the electric current which feeds it stops flowing, then the spirit is freed. This is death. However, if the lesion which gave rise to the interruption could be cured by suitable apparatus, the field would be restored, and the spirit, if we called it back, would return and unite with matter, falling again into the restored magnetic field. For this, one would use human or vegetable ectoplasm which would cure the injured part. Death is therefore a defect which can be overcome. I do not mean to say that man could live eternally, but he could get as far as making Methuselah envious. He did not live longer because the flood swallowed him up. But if mankind were good, the forces of nature, instead of destroying man, would continue to preserve his life. I have told you what I think from the material point of view, but I could tell you much more from the spiritual point of view, exploring avenues which science, up to the present, has not even dreamed of. You showed a preference for the material point of view. You got what you asked for. The atomic danger. Q. Please tell me why you think our use of atomic energy is dangerous? A. I do not say that the use of atomic energy is a danger to humanity. What I do say is that aggressive hatred coupled with atomic energy will destroy the earth. There are two sides to every picture. It depends which you choose. Electrical energy is useful to man, as it turns motors, runs factories, produces abundant light, and in fact supplies all the requirements of modern life. Yet it is also used to power electric chairs to take another's life. Dynamite can also be put to peaceful uses, breaking up rocks, mining, making canals, etc. But it is also used in weapons of war. Aviation represents a step forward on the road to peace, and the brotherhood of man, yet it is used to rain destruction on cities, bringing death to many homes, orphaning thousands of innocent children who know nothing of the commercial interests of the potentates of Earth. In the story of Croesus, all that he touched was turned to gold. Mankind is a Croesus in reverse. If he touches the pure gold which God offers him, he turns it to filth that pollutes the world. Atomic energy is a gift of God, when used sparingly and for peaceful ends. Its wanton use and its application to war could mean the complete and utter extinction of the life as we know it today on this planet. The last chapter of atomic energy has not yet been written, neither on Earth nor in any other part of the universe. It cannot, in fact, be written by anyone because it has no end. You are, then, still beginners in this vast subject. Soon you will use hydrogen, nuclear fusion, and then gamma rays, as means of destruction. If you do not destroy the globe with hydrogen bombs, you will do so by other more powerful means. One day the end will come. If nothing else, when you discover the magnetic effects of the planets, you will destroy everything. Put a monkey in a laboratory and see what happens. The people of Earth have two roads ahead, life or death. May they make a wise choice. Q. Do you mean to say that atomic energy is good, except when used for warlike purposes? In that case, Its effect can only be harmful from the moral point of view, but not inherently harmful. A. I meant both. The moral aspect is obvious, but I implied the material aspect too. Q. What is its effect upon the material order of things? A. In a short time you will have hydrogen bombs of devastating power. Remember I told you that in the upper regions of the atmosphere physiochemical reactions take place which prevent the penetration of rays from the sun. These layers not only filter radioactivity, but also maintain the Earth in space. One must often admire man's acts of generosity, when he becomes good and is endowed with intelligence. At other times he shows himself to be a fool. If a slight increase in solar activity disturbs life on Earth, changing human beings, Hertzian waves, climate, etc., how much more harm can be done by an increase in radioactivity directly injected into the heart of Earth by hydrogen bombs? Solar disturbances are periodic and their effects soon disappear because they are the result of waves, but radioactivity produced by hydrogen bombs has a lasting effect, because atomic dust remains in suspension and takes time to fall. While in suspension it damages the higher layers, when it falls it poisons everything. A planet is a delicate organism, whose natural equilibrium cannot be upset with impunity. This excess radioactivity begins by influencing men's brains, upsetting them noticeably. Soon you will see madness range over the Earth. The use of hydrogen bombs will unleash the horsemen of the apocalypse, who are designated for that day and hour. Elements now unknown will appear and poison the vegetation, and, consequently, men and animals. The seas will be poisoned and the fish will die. Water will be contaminated at its source, because it will fall from radioactive clouds. Showers of particles will fall to Earth and the crops will perish. Moreover, the atmospheric layers will be changed. Upon their composition depends the stability of the planet. They will then cease to produce light and affect the luminosity of the sun. They will no longer be able to filter the solar emanations and the sun will turn black and you will experience indescribable sensations. There will be Dantesque scenes. It will be then that Earth's people discover how wrong was the theory based on the fixed speed of light at 186,000 miles per second. Earth will be subject to energy in the form of ultraviolet waves, with speeds of millions of miles per second. Meanwhile, in spite of this intense solar energy, there will be no light, but only a rusty red glow near the ground. Man will suffer from terrible cold, but his flesh will be burned as with a hot iron by actinic radiation. If man looks at the sun, his eyes will be destroyed. The upper layers of the atmosphere produce or prevent earthquakes. A major alteration of these would make the whole Earth tremble and its cities will collapse like a pack of cards, a quaking Earth below, and darkness and burning heat above. Enormous waves will form on the seas, compressed violently by the solar energy. The poles will be subject to greater solar pressure and will melt, raising the level of the seas so that people in maritime cities would be struck with terror. The roaring of the waters will play a fearful duet with the groaning of the Earth. The present rate of atomic explosions has already caused the mean heat of the Earth to increase, and it will continue to do so at the rate of 0.3 degrees Celsius each year. If there were to be a hydrogen war, there would be pandemonium. Radioactivity in the upper layers is already enough to melt the polar caps and flood low-lying cities. In 20 years there will be a difference of 6 C. Before then, all the ice of the poles will have melted. Strange diseases will appear. The liver is a living laboratory and on being attacked by the ingestion of radioactive elements scattered about the world, it will lose its ability to produce the elements for bodily defenses. Leukemia will destroy children who have not reached puberty, as well as old people whose sex force is spent. Cancer will spread rapidly. Ghastly pestilence will attack the skin and the eyes and there would be no cure. Nursing mothers will weep with sorrow, knowing that their milk, which should nourish the child, carries lethal poisons which will destroy its bones and bring leukemia. Many, unable to withstand such suffering, will seek death, cursing life and those who launched such despair upon the world. Then humanity will see with a progress without God has brought them maniacs in the streets, the maimed everywhere, hospitals overflowing, cemeteries full, larders empty, millions destroyed by war, orphaned children, ravaged cities, contaminated fields, poisoned waters, terrorized multitudes, plague, terror, blasphemy, grief, desolation. On earth, people in anguish, in the heavens the cosmic laws upset. Will you not understand that only spiritual progress linked to God can be of any value, and lead mankind on the road to peace? Will you not yet see that only love can uplift man to reach eternity? But this is not all. While atomic potential is being prepared in your arsenals to destroy Earth at one blow, guided missiles will be improved. The day will come when armies will lose their raison d'etre, navies will be useless, and even the most advanced air force will be obsolete. Men will destroy themselves by pressing buttons. Then the great danger will threaten. In a moment, like a flash of lightning, a cloud of flame could annihilate all life of Earth. For a rocket, to get from one continent to another, needs to climb to heights where only pure hydrogen exists. There would be a hydrogen bomb in the nose of this rocket. Now, in the upper layers of the atmosphere, atomic reactions are subject to different laws. Magnetic fields are weaker and the bomb more easily triggered off. The critical mass and the critical distance are not the same. The great mass of pure hydrogen in the upper regions and the whole Earth would be transformed into a blazing inferno. Even with a bomb working with heavy hydrogen alone, the homogeneous medium will ensure the sudden transformation of these layers into helium. That would be the end. Perhaps it would be better than a slow ending. If this should happen, the prophecy of Saint Peter, written in the last chapter of his second letter, would be fulfilled. But the day of the Lord will come as a thief in the night, in which the heavens shall pass away with a great noise and the elements shall melt with fervent heat, the earth also shall be burned up. No one will know when this day will be, because the blow would be struck by surprise, without formal declaration of hostilities. Men will think they are safely leading a normal life, when a madman presses the button, stabbing the earth and murdering its inhabitants. Man, for having sown all these years, life without God, shall shortly reap a harvest of tares, because the ears of science are ripening already. Q. What are the elements which will bring about changes in the liver, causing disease? A. The radioactive elements will cause changes in proteins and these will attack the liver. Radioactive carbon will alter the metabolism. Cobalt, which normally helps to prevent anemia, will, in this radioactive state, destroy the blood cells. An isotope of strontium will unite with calcium and affect the bones. Phosphorus, which is concentrated in the brain, will reach motor nerve centers and radioactive iodine will work its way into the main glands of the body. Radioactive aluminium and magnesium will influence the sex glands. Because of the destruction of parts of the hypothalamus, man will suffer from terrible hunger. But there will be nothing to eat, others will have an uncontrollable sexual desire. If the activity of the thyroid is impaired, it will upset the balance with the adrenal glands, which will either produce an excess of adrenaline or none at all. Q. What has the thyroid got to do with the adrenals? A. In the case of a tiger, whose existence in the wild state depends on his ferocity, the adrenals are twice the size of the thyroid, whereas in man, the thyroid is large and the adrenal small. The relationship is obvious. Q. Is all this a mere possibility, or is it all inevitable? A. That is something I cannot answer. It is up to you on Earth to decide whether all this stays in the realm of possibility, or whether you turn it into reality. Man has free will. No one can tell him what he must do. The only thing I can say is that these will be the consequences. Do not do as the sorcerer's apprentice did, not knowing what he was toying with. Men are letting off bombs, not realizing that their effects are not always immediate. It is like the saturation point in chemistry. One can keep putting drops into a liquid without anything happening, then, suddenly the critical point is reached and the whole solution changes. From then on, it is impossible to control the reaction. Persistent radioactivity in the upper layers of the atmosphere produces the same effect. No one has gone high enough up from the Earth to measure and observe what is happening. If you could have known Earth's luminosity before, seen from outside, and could observe it now, you would see a difference. The radioactive dust which stays in the stratosphere already gives rise to fear for the future of men. If bomb tests continue, one day war will be thrust upon you, bringing with it increased radioactivity. Let Earth scientists explode bombs for another 15 years and you will see the result of their madness. It will be too late.